Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC's proactive, personalized approach to engagement helps you build your major gift pipeline even in a time of social distancing. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights about alumni interest and connections and automatically delivers them to advancement professionals for use in cultivation. QBAC is a force multiplier for development officers, enabling them to focus on what they do best, developing deep relationships with individuals and converting them into active donors. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive Fundraising's training. If you are looking to align your team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about our four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, hire another member of your team, let's ensure everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you'd prefer a virtual seminar, we can do that too. Let's get your team thinking more critically and carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I'll also put some information in the show notes.
Hi, Rob. It is a pleasure to have you on this bright early morning in October. We have been trying to get this meeting scheduled for quite some time. I think we've rescheduled it 2, 3, perhaps 4 different times. But I am really excited to have you here this morning, and we're going to have a great conversation. I'm looking forward to this one. It's a subject we haven't talked a lot about very specifically in a while. But before we dive into that, Rob, how about we just ask you to introduce yourself?
Sure. Happy to. Great to be with you, Jason. Thanks for the opportunity to have this conversation. Again, I'm Rob Zinkin. I'm a longtime higher ed administrator in advancement and marketing. And I currently serve as vice president of RHB, a higher education marketing consultancy. And I can give you a bit of brief background. First on RHB, we're in our 30th year of helping colleges and universities solve enrollment and marketing and advancement challenges. And at our core is helping institutions identify an authentic market position and channel their behaviors, their language, and their strategies to that choice. So that means we equip them to confidently communicate their distinctiveness throughout the student lifetime journey and thus drive deeper engagement and stronger relationships with their constituents. We also have a team of Slate CRM experts, and Slate covers the entire life cycle of enrollment, student success, and advancement. And then I lead our practice in organizational design and development for marketing and communications, helping colleges and university leaders answer critical questions about how should an outcomes-focused modern marketing organization be structured, staffed, and supported at their institution. And before joining RHB last year, I was in higher education administration for more than 20 years, including 17 years at Indiana University. And I've been very fortunate over that span to gain a variety of experiences in frontline positions as a development officer, alumni officer, marketing and communications officer. At Indiana University, I had a campus level roles as assistant dean for advancement, vice chancellor for external affairs, and eventually moved into a system-wide role as associate vice president for marketing, spanning 9 campuses and 100,000 students. So that's the quick and dirty, a bit
wow.
of bit of background on our organization and my background. And I know, Jason, by the way, that you're a baseball guy. So for the record, I'm a lifelong Cincinnati Reds fan. The Reds had a quick exit in the playoffs this year, but a great run to get there. So I'll build on the positives.
And aren't we all, not all of us baseball guys and gals, just down in the dumps? Gosh, it's like my sanctuary, man. If I could be at a baseball park, even my writing and my reading, I know at our local ballpark, I'll take a book with me. I can read in that ballpark. It's just like being in heaven. But Rob, I have to, before we dive into our subject, use the word organizational design. And I don't think that's a term that enough of us in the nonprofit space, and perhaps we do talk about it in higher ed. I think higher ed may have its understanding of what organizational design means. But even with our own consulting here at Responsive, we use the term organizational design as an alternative term to sort of clarify what it is when we talk about providing fundraising counsel. What does that mean to you all when you use, or to you in particular, what does that mean to you when you talk about organizational design, perhaps differently than in another use of, you know, for consulting purposes?
Yeah, that it's a great topic, and it's so relevant, especially in higher ed right now, where so many things are happening, and whether it's an advancement team or a marketing communications team or any part of the institution, there's so much realignment that's happening now because of budget constraints and all that's happened with COVID. And so it's all about how do we drive effectiveness? How do we drive efficiency? And so what does that look like in terms of culture? What does that look like in terms of our overarching strategy? Those questions that that I mentioned around structure, staffing, we will dig into those issues of what does the structure look like? What is the staffing? Do we have the right people in the right positions to do the most effective work? Do they have the proper systems in place? What is the spend? Is our spend comparative to our peers or our aspirational peers? And I love the term design, organizational design, because think of it like web design, for instance, where your website should always be changing. You're constantly iterating, enhancing, improving. You know, it's not set it and forget it. And the same should be true for our organizations. For some reason, we've gotten to a point where we think of organizational realignment as a bad thing. We're going to get, we'll have a redesign or we'll have a restructure, but that's the sign of a healthy organization. If you're constantly evolving your organization and ensuring that you're staying competitive and staying ahead, you should always be changing. I think to a colleague who oversaw a huge entity of about 1,000 employees, and the benchmark for that organization was about 20 to 25% each year. Not that they were aiming for that benchmark, but that ended up being on average what it was every year of positions changing, of internal promotions, of movement within the organization, certain departments within that team being redesigned. So it's a very healthy, necessary process for organizations to stay competitive. So it's something we should always be thinking about and working on.
Yeah. So again, going back to my use and your appreciation, my use of baseball analogies. So I like to think of organizational design being very consistent to, you know, for you can have a rock star baseball player, but if he or she doesn't have a great ball field to play in, it's not going to make for a very good game. And so I think we spend a lot of time, especially those of us who are focused on talent and who we're hiring. You know, it's one thing to have a very talented individual who can knock the ball out of the park, But who wants to come to a baseball game when the setting is just really lousy and you can't play, you know, if the field isn't beautiful, who wants to be there? So,
exactly.
Rob, one of the things you and I agreed we would talk about, and I'm going to let you tee it up, and I appreciate that you referred back to my previous conversation with Ken Burnett. That was a big conversation that we had earlier this year in 2020. And so I want to dive into that. What's the subject?
Yes, that was a great episode with you and Ken. And the fundamental question there was marketing a mistake for fundraising? And I'll admit, as a marketer, hearing the framing of that question that way can be a little bit jarring.
God, it messed with you.
Yeah, no doubt. No question, marketing and fundraising are clearly different. But I believe strongly that these two functions should be integral partners. So that all gets to this big idea that we're all marketers and we're all fundraisers. And ideally, yeah, everyone in our organization is both a marketer and a fundraiser, and that they should understand those functions, they should value those functions, and they should see their role in those functions. Marketing shouldn't just be what this office or this department over here does, or the same with advancement. It should be an organizational function that the department provides leadership for. So if we're all marketers and we're all fundraisers, Jason, two things need to happen for that to be the case. Number one, we ensure that marketing and fundraising are close partners in terms of those functions. A fundamental point of common ground is that both bring a constituent-centric perspective that organizations desperately need, especially colleges and universities. And too often we hear things about marketing and fundraising being at odds with each other, or even marketing being a hindrance to fundraising. And then the other thing that needs to happen is that we should really try to demystify some of these misunderstood marketing terms and concepts such as brand and branding, so that we can begin to recognize the strong parallels between brand strategy and philanthropy. And when we go beyond branding to coherence, I think this important linkage becomes even more evident. So that's the point. We're all fundraisers, we're all marketers. And I know there's a lot of stuff to unpack there, Jason, so I'm happy to dive right in or take it in any direction you'd like.
I don't have a hang up with the notion of what marketing is and the value of even the strategic title of that. So that was actually, I think I borrowed that title from a blog post that Ken had actually posted probably 8 or 10 years ago, the idea of and so marketing worked in his favor and marketing worked in mine as well, apparently. I think the issue, the sort of the hang up I have with marketing as it relates to fundraising is more of the question, in order for fundraising to be sort of an extension or perhaps a close cousin of marketing, do we necessarily, Rob, have to also carry with us a lot of the other consumer assumptions? And does the donor have to sort of be understood through the lens as if the donor and the consumer are one and the same? That's my big hang up with the notion of marketing and PR and any of that sort of that bantering that we go around with sales, marketing, and PR in our space is, can we distinctively see the donor separate from that of the consumer, which is the individual buying a product or service in exchange for a fair price, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. If we go back to that, and I know that blog post that you're referring to from Ken, and I remember in that he said something to the effect of that donors don't want to be marketed to.
Right.
And
yeah,
so equating, as you said, marketing with sales, with persuasion. And I would argue that as marketers, that we should represent the voice of the constituent or the student or the donor or whatever term you want to use or whatever your setting is, that's first and foremost what perspective we should have, that we should be the ones in meetings asking, what would our students think of that? Or have we asked our alumni about that? Or have we talked to any donors and bringing those types of audience insights to the table? And the four P's, if you will, of marketing, the traditional four P's of product, price, place, and promotion, when we talk about being marketed to, we're only talking about that P of promotion. And unfortunately, in higher ed, certainly, marketing is still at many places stuck in that promotion P, with that being the major focus of the function. So what we need more of, if marketing is about bringing an intimate understanding of the constituent and of the external environment, we need marketing's expertise and marketing's input on developing new programs and shaping the constituent experience. I think back to so many times, and I'm sure your listeners can relate to perhaps a colleague coming to us and knocking on our door with a new program or a new initiative, and now they want to get the word out or they want to raise money for it. And marketing and fundraising can add value, should add value more upstream in the development of these programs and these initiatives, because Our role is to understand the organization's stakeholders and its prospective stakeholders. So we're doing, just a quick example, Jason, we're doing some strategic planning research where we're analyzing 108 active college and university strategic plans. And one thing that has come across is that it's not uncommon to have a VP for advancement as part of the planning process, but I'd like to see more major gifts officers or development officers as part of these planning efforts, and certainly more marketing and communication staff members, because wouldn't they have a wonderful perspective to add value to these efforts in bringing what the outside world is thinking of our organization and the perspectives that they have. So that's first and foremost what marketing should be about, not about, you know, the latest 30-second ad or, you know, this PR consumer-centric mindset. It's about those that our organization is trying to serve.
Okay, so I've got, it just so happens that you want to have this conversation about marketing today. And I've got, I'm working on this book project, and I've got this book in front of me. Austinton is his name, O-S-E-N-T-O-N, Austinton. He wrote a book called The Death of Demand. And this is the other hang up I've got with marketing. He talks about the idea that most companies believe that they do indeed have relationships with their customers. So he's talking about to the for-profit side of the world. But real relationships require two-way communication, not one-way sales pitches to the world. The fact that customer relationships for many companies is a myth. That's what he's basically making the argument in this little section. He calls it the myth of customer relationships. And I think that's perhaps a little bit of what fundraising and what Ken was talking about in the earlier podcast and even his blog post is the idea that we've sort of bought into this notion, largely having inherited this idea from the marketing and PR world, that we can call it relationships when in fact they're not two-way communication sort of relationships. I think, and because I think on the softer side of things, when we talk about fundraising, we talk about the nonprofit sector, they just don't want to be sold to. And I think there's a genuineness on the part of the person doing the quote-unquote marketing, the fundraising, the sales, whatever you say, call them doing. They want to have real relationships, and marketing just doesn't seem to be the thing that's going to necessarily do that.
Right. Marketing in and of itself, I agree, is not going to achieve that. And my point is more about what the role of marketing should be within the organization to, to help an organization have those audience insights, to understand those that they're trying to reach, influence, and move to action better, and to try to get away from these things about, misperceptions, again, around what marketing is, what branding is. You know, if we asked 10 of your listeners, Jason, on what brand means, we'd get all sorts of different answers. We'd hear all sorts of things. And hopefully we've established that it's not a logo or an ad, but often you might hear it described as a promise. And I think that's closer, but that's still coming from the perspective of the organization, that it's about me. It's about our organization. And the key point is that we don't decide what our brand is, our audiences, our constituents do. You know, it's not what we say, it's what they say. So your brand is more of it's an expectation. And that expectation is shaped by all the experiences, all the touch points that someone has with your organization. It's all of those put together. So an organization doesn't decide its brand. It's certainly can be in control of its authentic market position. And that's another discussion. But to get to this point about a two-way relationship, I'd rather we talk more about, marketing often gets into a discussion around brand, more about coherence. And coherence is aligning what you deliver with what you say you deliver, what you do with what you say you do. And coherence is achieved. We think of it in terms of three questions, that if you can answer these three questions and have alignment around them, then that's what your organization should be striving for in terms of what is true about your organization. What does your organization say is true about itself? And then third, what do others believe is true about your organization? And that's the important work that I think marketing can help and should bring to an organization, is not about how do we say, you know, how do we sell, how do we promote X, Y, and Z, but how do we make sure that what is true about us, that's where we're relaying that, we're conveying that, and that aligns with what others believe. So it's really having this really strong congruence around what you do and what you say you do and what others believe you do. And I think that's the true value that marketing professionals and marketing teams can bring and help an organization with its fundraising efforts as well.
Is it driving the so I have studied up on the history of sort of you know, I can't reach the book, but one of the first fundraising textbooks that was written for higher education was written by not a marketing professional, but someone, Kelly, she identifies herself as a PR professional. But can fundraising, in your mind, can fundraising, marketing, PR, sales, all these sort of terms, can they all sort of sit next to each other as peers, or is one always going to sort of be driving and sort of be in the driving seat when it comes to the work that we do in the nonprofit sector?
Yeah, great question. It depends. If the organization, if fundraising is the purpose of the organization, I think the answer is a little bit different. If we're talking about a college, a university, or perhaps another nonprofit, I think they should be peers. Not peers in terms of silos, but close partners. And again, the point of commonality between those functions is this constituent-centric perspective. One of my Indiana University colleagues, Dan Smith, who was dean of the business school and then president of the foundation, he would always say that higher ed has perfected talking about themselves to themselves. And we've seen this play out in the research analyzing these strategic plans across higher ed, that many of them feel very internally focused, that they're created by the institution, for the institution, and in many cases to raise the institution's profile. And that's a little bit of a different story. But you know, those strategic plans, I think of one from the University of Louisville that stood out because it was developed in such a consumable way. And it was all around these points of the university being a great place to learn, a great place to work, and a great place in which to invest. And that's, again, very much created with the input of both marketing, the input of fundraising, and a close collaborative way that, you know, ideally these things are in sync with each other. And yes, one can support the other. You can have marketing under fundraising, but in an organization like a college or a university where you're serving a myriad of stakeholders, I think ideally these are close peers that are supporting the organization in this strategic way and bringing the perspective of the constituent, the perspective of what's happening outside the institution. And, you know, when that faculty member comes in and says, hey, we've got this, you know, this program or this new initiative, they're the ones asking about, is this relevant? Is this rare? Relevant in terms of, will our constituents care about it? Is it meaningful to them? And is it rare? Is everyone else doing this? Is it differentiated in any way? How are we doing this better than perhaps our peers or our counterparts? So I think when those two entities are aligned and are synced up, I think there's so much more value that they can add to an organization, to a college, to a university. But there's no one structure. And certainly institutions of higher ed vary in size and scope. And so, you know, we could talk about the pluses and minuses of varied structures. But ideally, when they're aligned, because in higher ed, unfortunately, we tend to organize ourselves into functional silos while our audiences look at the institution holistically. So the alignment between those two, I think there's more power, more value when that's the structure, when that's the alignment organizationally.
So, Rob, when I'm talking to my clients, maybe this is a conversation that you're having, because this certainly, or to some degree, you're having periodically with yours. It's this idea that we understand as marketing professionals, the idea between product development and market development. And I think some of our fundraising peers who would come into the room and say, I'm a fundraising professional, they perhaps, you know, I mean, I learned the difference between product and market development and marketing 101 in college. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of the mistake that we have is that even if we are proud or not so proud to sort of hold up the marketing banner as fundraising professionals, that we're constantly trying to create more products when in fact, fundraising is really a function of market development, which is to say that it's, you know, developing different types of relationships with different types of constituency. And I work in higher education myself, so I understand the idea that you have students, you have faculty, you have donors, you have parents, you have all these sort of different markets. But the product largely stays the same. You know, the cheeseburger that we're selling at the college is still the same cheeseburger. It's just that you have to understand the different markets that buy that cheeseburger. Is that sort of one of the hangups that we have when it comes to, if I'm a fundraiser who's sort of resisting the idea, like again going back to the conversation, the tension that sort of surfaced with my conversation with Ken, is that we don't understand that differentiation there?
I think to some degree, and yes, you could say that within a higher ed concept that, you know, we're largely doing the same things. And if you look at an institution you may be working with and their set of competitors or peers, and there would be more things that are similar than things that are dissimilar. And yeah, so. Really finding there are things about that experience, things about, you know, that campus experience and that education that are unique, perhaps in the way it's delivered, but there are points of differentiation that, finding that differentiation is, you know, can be challenging. And it's understanding, that from a prospective student standpoint, from an alum standpoint. I think of one institution that even does market research with key employers, basically to validate what we say about an education from this institution. Is that what you're seeing in the graduates that you hire? Is there alignment between what we say is special about this institution and then what you're seeing from our graduates? Constantly validating. Not because we're saying that as the president or the administrative staff, but what are others saying? And again, that's what I think more and more organizations should be bringing to the table to inform how we talk about, how we develop, our services, what we're providing to society as an organization. But it's that external perspective that's so valuable. And I think marketing and fundraising can be such close partners in that, because in many cases, the rest of the organization can be very, very internally focused on here's what we do, here's what we deliver, and providing that lens from the external environment is critical.
So I had another guest, and you may have listened to this episode too, John Feudo from Amherst, and we were talking about, this wasn't about fundraising and marketing, but it was the idea between the sort of the development department and alumni relations. So it was just another one of these sort of divisional points in higher education. And he was basically saying that he had been doing some research for a writing project very recently, and he just found that these people couldn't get along. So it wasn't the legitimacy or the validity of that each one of these sort of people bring to the table and their various different toolboxes. But it's just the idea of learning how to get along with people that perhaps see the world a little differently. I mean, how do you, Rob, as a consultant coming in to work with perhaps the college where I teach at, how do you just get these people to sort of validate and acknowledge the differences in ways that they sort of contribute to the bigger picture, and just like each other and get along? That's essentially what John, it was kind of fascinating, because John has access to, you know, very large institutions, and he's just basically saying these alumni relations people and these development people can't get along.
Yeah, and certainly some of that exists, and it's an interesting time in the world of alumni relations and alumni engagement. And I would answer that question by first, I would want to understand with that particular institution in talking to their development staff, talking to their alumni relations staff. And I think the heart of it is that that perspective comes from alumni engagement is what is the role? Like, what is the role of alumni engagement and this team and this function to advance the university, to serve its strategic priorities? And that's one of the things that we'll see in our work with organizations as we try to sort through how do we make this the most effective and efficient marketing organization possible to serve the needs of the institution, is trying to get alignment around this fundamental question of what is the change that marketing should affect for the institution? Or in your question, what ideally should alumni relations be doing to advance and serve the institution and our many constituents? So going back to the strategic planning research that we're doing, the majority of the alumni relations mentions or discussions are very much through the lens of philanthropy. I think there's an opportunity for higher ed to continue to evolve to a much more holistic view of the many ways that alumni can add value through advocacy, through hiring graduates in so many different ways, but also this, again, going back to this concept of coherence, the ways in which the institution should be serving its alumni throughout their lifetime. So I think often that's the heart of the issue, and that's the root of it, is there's not a clear understanding of the value that a certain function should have for the institution. And perhaps in some of the cases with John that John's running into, I would guess that it's strictly through a fundraising lens. And there are opportunities to broaden that perspective of the many ways that alumni relations can help an institution.
Okay, Rob, so before we let you go, so we've got this story playing out here in the state of Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania we have state-run universities across the state, and they're all good institutions. And they're actually going to merge what looks like six of them into two, given the sort of the current landscape with the economy and so forth. They're going to merge six state-level, state institutions, state colleges, if you will, into two. And let's say whoever's sort of guiding this decision brings a guy like Rob in and starts that. What's that conversation going to look like? What are you going to do to bridge, to merge, to create coherence? To use your word, coherence. How are you going to create coherence amongst, say, four to six institutions that all have unique brands, all have different identities, all have very different quote unquote marketing plans? What's that going to look like?
Yeah, wow, that's going to be an undertaking, isn't it?
Yeah, six of them.
That's what we're seeing in higher ed. That's the reality. And you think of the administrative teams that will be condensed and jobs that will be lost and history. So I really feel for the students, for former students, for staff at those institutions who are going to be affected. But I think that discussion starts with an understanding of what is valued among those different institutions within Pennsylvania. So they each bring a certain set of strengths to the table, no question. But again, to get to that question of coherence, so how does that line up with what the understanding is in the state and what those perceptions are, and what does the data look like? I mean, should we be thinking about, if we have six programs, master's programs in business, what does that look like? Whose does that become? Or do we bring all those faculty together to have one program? It's got to be less about those institutions and more about how do we best serve the state and the future students going forward. But that's going to be really tough when you have identities that are lost or merged or changed. Those are really difficult conversations, but I think it has to be driven by by those that those organizations are serving. You know, those identities are not ends of themselves. It's about how do we advance education in the state? How do we have a more educated citizenry? How do we add to the economic development of those regions? And so I think it has to start with some really in-depth market research and understanding perceptions of those institutions and the value that they bring. And that's got to help guide some of the decision making. But some of those decisions, no question, Jason, are going to be really challenging and really tough. And certainly there will be ones that won't please everyone.
So it's interesting you use the word history, and this will be my last question. But you got me thinking. I'm working on that second cup of coffee that I told you once it got working. Perhaps marketing when we're comparing, if we're comparing apples, trying to sort of get a apples to oranges sort of understanding of what marketing and fundraising are doing right differently and similarly. Is it fair to say that in some ways marketing is sort of communicating to the future, to students of the future, but perhaps in many ways fundraising is oftentimes speaking to the history and those who've sort of come in the past? I mean, isn't that sort of, and maybe that's why oftentimes fundraising is seen to have a closer relationship with PR, because oftentimes it's the relationships perhaps that we already have or something. I don't know, but it's interesting to hear, you know, to differentiate, like for example, I've done a lot of work, Rob, with K-12 private schools. And oftentimes I try to get my client, these clients, to understand the difference between the tuition paying parent and the grandparent, who one tends to be the person who's the tuition paying parent is buying the seat in the classroom for their children, which is in many ways a marketing function. Whereas the grandparent is much more visionary and perhaps wants to see tradition and history and is very much less concerned about drop off and pick up and, you know, what their plans for graduation are necessarily. And so that tends to be sort of some of those where those gaps are. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think you know, with marketing, and as we get into an expression of position and an expression of brand, that is certainly grounded in reality, but it has an aspirational tone to it. What a student hopes to become. And I do think there's a parallel with that with fundraising, because you're grounded in history in terms of the experience and what you know that institution represents and its values and all that it's achieved, but helping it to further transform to be, become more a better version of itself going forward, and driving to that area of impact. It makes me think, and I know your book, I love the concept around arm's length fundraising, and I think we can get caught up sometimes in this in some version of arm's length stewardship, because I remember in my time as a development officer and trying to do all the right things with, say, a scholarship donor, where you have the student thank them and you have an opportunity to meet the student and the scholarship donor together at the annual luncheon and checking all those boxes and doing the right things. But thinking about how do you take that a step further, where the communication is around what the scholarship students did with their careers. What's the impact that they made on others? What are the stories of those individuals whose lives were touched by the scholarship recipient who, have added value to society in various ways? So it's this future focused, impact sort of long term. And I think that's another parallel of brand work being about building this long term value. And philanthropy is certainly a long-term relationship building game. And that's another close parallel. So I think that grounding in reality and grounding in the past, especially around mission and especially around values, but building towards, transforming a future and, helping create something for students of the future, is really powerful in another way, where I think there's a strong synergy between the marketing and fundraising functions that institutions, again, are better served when those external perspectives are brought together to serve the institution.
Rob, we have had your attention and our listeners' attention for more than a half hour, and that's usually about the point that we start to lose them. When I'm talking to a guy like you, I always like to ask the question, if somebody's listening and you and who's the person you want to hear from? You're a consultant. You do what I do. You negotiate contracts. You like to work with perhaps other, you know, institutions of higher learning and others. Who's that person you want to hear from, having listened to our conversation today?
Who's the person that I want to hear from?
Yeah. If somebody's listening today and they're interested in reaching out to you, who is that person?
Oh, sure. Feel free to reach out on our website. If you're interested in learning about some of the things that we're writing about, some of the things that we're thinking about, especially with the impact of the pandemic and these really interesting and challenging times for institutions, rhb.com is where we share some of our insights. So feel free to go there. You can certainly connect with me through that website, or by all means connect on LinkedIn or Twitter. LinkedIn would be the easiest way to connect and reach out. And would love to hear about how other institutions are working through some of these issues, and especially with some of the constraints around budgeting and hiring freezes, and institutions are having to be very creative in doing the work that they do, and in the unfortunate position of having to do less with more. So would love to hear how others are facing those challenges and doing so creatively to serve their organizations and serve their audiences.
Are they generally, is the person who's going to call you today, are they generally facing a particular challenge or encountering a different opportunity? Or like, if I call you today and I'm like, I want to work with Rob, what's going on for me usually?
Yeah, usually it may be in the period of a transition, whether that might be a CMO or a VP for marketing or a VP for advancement. So an opportunity to step back and assess and say, is our organization set up optimally to drive success and drive results for our institution? Do we need to take a step back and think about how we're structured and staffed, those sorts of things? So there's that issue around, again, the organizational design and development, and then merely just issues that that many institutions are facing around, we're facing a revenue challenge, and getting at the heart of what that may be could be an enrollment related issue, or a larger issue around trying to meet revenue goals for their college or university.
Cool. Well, I hope you hear from that person. Rob, this has been a wonderful conversation. I think we'll be able to say that between my conversations with John and with Ken, perhaps you have helped us in this series of conversations between fundraising and marketing, sort of helping the two get along a little better. And I certainly has been an enlightening conversation. You're always welcome back, Rob, as long as you got a big idea or bold opinion. Thanks for being with me this morning.
Thanks so much, Jason. Take care.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must-read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.